Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It is 4 minutes after the hour, and happy new year. It is January the 2nd, 2018. I think that's the first time I've said that. 2018. But I hope you had a nice holiday. I hope you had a nice New Year's Eve. I know I was in bed early, but that's just me. You get used to going to bed early when you have a morning radio show. But I'm glad to be here this morning, and happy new year. I want to make 2018 a year where I grow in my understanding of God, and I grow in my wisdom, because I think that's the key to a good, happy life. And one of the things I'm going to be using this year is a book I got this last year from Tim Keller on God's wisdom for navigating life. And he talks about the word wisdom, which in Proverbs talks about including being moral, but goes way beyond that. It's making the right choice even when there are no clear moral laws telling you explicitly what to do. Some decisions require only knowledge, like the proper medicine to take. And some only are compliance with rules, like whether to commit adultery or not. But no Bible verse will tell you exactly whom to marry, what job to take, whether to move or stay put. Yet a wrong decision can be disastrous. And there are no explicit moral laws against character flaws, such as abrasiveness, impulsiveness, emotional fragility, and disorganization. I think I have at least three out of the four there, maybe four out of the four. And yet they can also damage the course of your life. If God had given us a 100-volume set of rules for every situation, we would have relied on the book and our diligence. But when we see what wisdom truly is, we will be driven to look to Jesus, of whom it was said, "What's this wisdom that has been given him?" That's Mark chapter 6, verse 2. Have you ever seen an example of a good and moral person who is very unwise? Yeah, I know I have. So anyway, the prayer for this year is, Lord, help me to not be committed to help me not to be smug. Help me to know what truth is and to lean into wisdom, and help bring into my life what is necessary for wisdom to grow, and remind me that I received it from you. I think 2018, we all need to make a real strong, firm commitment to being biblically more literate, grow in our grace and our kindness and our love, because it is what is on my agenda, so I know I'm going to be pushing that for me. So in other words, you're going to probably be hearing it a bunch too, and that we're going to try to take God's word absolutely so seriously in our study of it this year. I know I want to, even more so than ever, because where else do we go except him for these words of life? So I've got my friend Patrick Albanese on the studio line already from prestigious West Des Moines. So we'll take a short break at 7 minutes after the hour, and we'll be back in just a minute.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain, I could
while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain. I'd unravel.
And of course, that theme song belongs to my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines, Patrick Albanese. Good morning, Patrick. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
So
I loved that opening. That whole thing that, although, you know, and maybe when you're in this pursuit of trying to be less smug, you should say it more like Thurston Howell the Third. Just, yeah, so I'm going to be less smug.
Yes, exactly.
That's so, my yacht.
Yeah.
I, in California, we used to have smog alerts. I will be happy to be the guy who does your smug alert.
I appreciate that. That's a good accountability, because that's a problem. All right.
Yeah.
U.S. Senator Al Franken is set to resign today. Then he has even suggested that he might go back into comedy.
Oh, gosh. Yes, I had heard about that. And the Senate voted unanimously to keep him in the Senate and away from comedy as far as possible. which a lot of people voted for.
Of course.
His approval ratings instantaneously went up, and a bunch of women lined up for a photo opportunity. They said, please, stay out of comedy.
And, you know, the weather remains a big topic of discussion today at every coffee shop and office in the world, and it's in Minnesota anyway. It's Hettinger, North Dakota, owns the record for the coldest temperature on New Year's Day, National Weather Service in Bismarck. And I want to say to all of our Bismarck listeners, hang in there, that yesterday it was a negative 45 degrees in Hettinger. Probably saying that wrong.
Wow.
Yeah. Weather Service went on to say it was so cold that it may have been the coldest temperature anywhere in the world.
Global warming, is there anything it can't do? Wow.
Well, in Calgary, the bitter cold weather is even too cold for the penguins. The Calgary Zoo curator says that five kinds of penguins at the zoo, and none of them can stand the bitter cold and weather. So now they've come inside. And I think I've heard some of them have started smoking.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I mean, if I were a penguin and I was at the Calgary Zoo, it's like, look, you know, what do you think I left the South Pole for? I left for warmer climates. This is not what I signed up for. I got into your little cage there so that I could come to where it was a little bit more balmy. This is unacceptable conditions. Wow.
Yeah. What is the weather for you in Des Moines?
You know, it's actually colder. I drove here from Minneapolis last night. I may have passed Rebecca on the road. I think she was driving the opposite direction.
I'm sure you did.
Yeah, I think it was kind of startling to be driving 250 miles south and watch the temperature go down about 5 degrees, excluding wind chill. And I think by the time I landed in my driveway, it was negative 11. On its way to negative 17.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I stopped my car one time at a rest stop because the inside window on the driver's side had frosted up so much I had a sheet of ice on it, which was very tasty in my glass of water in the car.
But
I couldn't see out my window.
Yeah. Well, as we go to Southern California today, I think the legal pot stores open up. Recreational marijuana is now legal in California. So,
speaking of smog alert,
it's not a good idea, in my opinion. Yours?
I think it's a good idea because I think that the people of California need yet another distraction as the state completely falls apart so that they don't notice or don't care. It just seems like a horrible idea. And, of course, it's all about the money. They go, hey, we can tax this stuff. This will be fantastic, which will open up a black market, which will offer cheaper product. And then they'll have to, just like in New York City where they were taxing cigarettes through the roof, where people start selling single cigarettes on street corners, they had to make that illegal, and they used the police force to stop it. And Eric Garner ended up dying because he was selling single cigarettes because it was an opportunity for him to make some money.
Mm-hmm.
So the unintended consequences here are, I think, you know, even Californians are going to have to say, Eureka.
Yeah.
What happened?
And speaking of unintended consequences, the Baltimore homicide rate is out of control, as you know. It's, I think, it was the new record for the most murders per capita in the city's history. And after the wake of the Freddie Gray case, try to say that at 6:15 in the morning.
Craziness.
There's a lot of they need the police to come back and not to be so reluctant to do their job. I think it's probably an awfully hard place to do your job well.
You're going to have to help me out with this. Hang on a second, because I'm having a tough time grabbing this concept that you seem to be pushing on me. Are you saying that you take a crime-ridden area, tell the police you don't want them around, that crime will actually go up?
That's what I'm suggesting. That's what I'm suggesting. Am I nuts or what?
You know, earlier in the show, you talked about this pursuit of wisdom.
Yeah, I know. I know.
I'm not entirely certain you're on the right path here.
I'm already violating my first principle of 2018.
Yeah, you might want to backtrack that goal just a little bit and say, how about first I get some wisdom and then I try to make that grow? Yeah, I know. Isn't it what – how could you not see this coming? This happened when I was living in California when they had a lot of the gang problems in South Central. and there were gang shootings, and then they would get upset with the police presence there. But a lot of it had started because, you know, they were saying, well, golly, you know, they're really a little bit too harsh on – or first there were drug problems, and so they said pass some laws, make, you know, the punishment on some of these guys tougher so that we don't have all this – drug crime in the streets. And they did, and they were locking kids up, and that led to more gangs, and then they didn't want the police around, and then there were drive-by shootings, and they said, yeah, how could that have happened? You go, well, you created the perfect environment. It's a petri dish of crime. Yeah, baking soda and vinegar creates a little volcano, and it works every single time, by the way.
Right.
Every single time. So, right. You know, ask the cops back, and then they'll have to ask the cops to be more aggressive, and then they'll complain that the cops are being aggressive. And I don't know if there's a perfect solution. I mean, I have an idea. Intact families would be a start, and a few other things. But, you know, I'm no expert on this stuff. It's just – it's not a surprise, is it?
No, not at all. So I'm going to take a break, Patrick. When we come back, I want to see if you have any New Year's resolutions. One of my New Year's resolutions is to more carefully plan things so I can enjoy more spontaneity.
Starting when? March?
Yeah. And one of my resolutions is not to clean my closet, as a reminder that clutter is a bad thing.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a short break. Be back with Patrick Albanese in just a minute. Good morning. It's 18 minutes after the hour. It is January 2nd. Happy birthday to JLR. And also, I'm speaking to my friend Patrick Albanese, who is on our studio line this morning. Patrick, today, word of the day is hokum, which is the meaning trite material introduced to evoke an emotional response from an audience. Sounds like the perfect word of the day for us, doesn't it?
Sounds like a profession to me. I'm not entirely certain that's a bad career path.
I'm not so sure either.
And I'm going to change my name to Dwight Hokum. I'm plenty happy.
Yeah. And on this day in 1990, actor Alan Hale Jr. died at the age of 71. He was, of course, Skipper on Gilligan's Island. Do you remember his name on the show? His character name?
Other than Skipper?
Yeah. He had a name.
Did they reveal it on the show?
Pardon?
Did they ever reveal it on the show?
Yeah, they did.
It's escaping me. What was it?
Jonas Grumby.
Jonas Grumby,
Skipper Jonas Grumby, yeah. See, this
is why I called him Skipper.
Odd facts known by few, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's what a great show and what a wonderful career ender for so many people. Just the finest, like, you know, you think of Bob Denver, you think you're Gilligan forever.
It's like Don Knotts, Barney Fife. You were Barney Fife.
Yeah. You can do a Love Boat and a Fantasy Island in the future, and that's about it, and you got to wear the cap. Just in case people don't recognize you.
Yeah. And Cuba Gooding Jr. is 50 today, so he went from Show Me the Money to Show Me the Blue Emu.
Yeah. You would think that at 50 years old you could drop the junior. It's like,
you would
come
think.
On, can
yeah.
I just,
yeah.
Can I just drop the – when do you get to drop the junior?
I have no idea.
I have no idea.
So we're now down to our second year with President Trump in office. His first year, according to
– He got a lot done.
It seems he got a lot done.
It seems he did, yeah.
His critics say no, but it seems that he's gotten a bunch of things done.
Well, you know, and I mean you fully expect – How many times can we do the sky is falling thing? I think he's been quite a surprise in many regards. You know, there was a Wall Street Journal article the other day, New York Times, Brett Stevens, who used to be with the Wall Street Journal, and he wrote a thing, and he says, hey, here's a list of 16 things, 16, which is, you know, not bad for a year's work. That's more than you and I get done in any given decade.
No doubt.
And he says, here's 16 things Trump did that I love, but I still wish Hillary were president. And it was basically he just doesn't like Trump's temperament and his attitude. And he thinks that, Hillary would be a more dignified president. And, you know, part of me is thinking that's like saying hey, Santa Claus brought me everything I wanted, but I hate him. I just don't, you know, if a kid did that, you'd say, all right, well, you know, I think Santa might be skipping this house next year. And, I go, at some point, it's like, it's okay. You can just not like the guy on a personal level, but stuff is getting done. Mm-hmm. And he's crossing off some things on a conservative wish list that people have said, woo, golly, that was a pretty good one. That's pretty good. You at least have to give him that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, I mean, you have to like the guy, but you got to say, I'll give you that. I'll give you that. And thank you for that.
Yeah. I mean, what if under his leadership, Roe v. Wade gets overturned?
I think some people will maybe have a dilemma. And again, I guess you could still be allowed to dislike him, but you might be, if you can't put up a cheer for something like that,
mm-hmm.
if you can't say, nope, it's unacceptable because it was him, I go, I don't know. You know, at some point in time, we have to pick our battles. And we talked about this weeks and weeks ago. You know, I've kind of gotten to the point in my life where I say, I have to choose platform, not personality. You know, I have to look at what is somebody promising? Can they deliver it? Is this the person to do it? Or is this person getting it done? I can't look at personality because, A, we're all flawed. And I think some of these people that run for these high offices are even more flawed in many ways. I can't expect perfection.
Mm-hmm.
If you throw up a guy like a Boy Scout Mitt Romney, he gets, you know, just destroyed by the opposition. And then he's too nice of a guy to fight back. So, you know, he's like, oh, that's not my style.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
So I'm just going to pray for people in leadership. I'm going to just try to make this year a year where I just pray for all of them because
that
I think
make
that's
the right
what
decisions.
They, that's the best thing I can do because I can affect really no outcome and nor am I trying. I just want to pray for people in leadership.
Yeah, you have zero, impact or you have zero influence on what they're going to do. But, you know, by consuming too much of this garbagey news, it has a tremendous amount of influence on your attitude for the day. And that's one of my New Year's resolutions is to just, you know, watch the consumption. You know, you regurgitate what you consume.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're consuming anger all day, you'll regurgitate anger. It's just not possible to regurgitate otherwise. Jesus could maybe consume the anger and regurgitate love, but we're not quite capable of that. And he had a better setup. Being the son of God and all.
Yeah. Distinct advantage, huh?
That's a home field advantage right there.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and I think that's a doable goal. You know, last year, as you know, I'd set a goal to lose 10 pounds and I didn't make it. I came up 15 pounds shy,
mm-hmm.
but I got close. And that's all that matters.
Yeah. So, Patrick, when we look at some of the things going on in our prison system, nice segue, Bill, there's a new drug now that can cost $100,000 for an inmate to receive for hepatitis C. So although it does have a high cure rate and it can cost up to $100,000 a patient, is that something you think should be available to inmates at taxpayers' expense?
Ouch.
You're pausing way too long. This is live radio.
There's the angry part of me that's going, what the heck? You know, you can't vote. You can't get the hepatitis vaccine. You know? There's another part of me that, you know, who wants to care for other humans and go, hey, you gotta. But it's a lot of money. And so you say, what do you do? Are we in danger of running out of this vaccine? Are they spreading hepatitis around in prisons? I mean, how is it spreading? Because if you're going to be giving $100,000, is it a cure? Or is it just is it a vaccine?
It's an antiviral. It has a very high cure rate.
Okay. And then the person goes back to their other activity in the prison. You'd say that was $100,000, not very well spent.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a lot of dilemma attached to it.
It does.
Where do you fit on that one? And
well,
then I'll just take your side.
Yeah.
We'll both take back.
I would love if the drug company could make it more accessible to people incarcerated. I don't want them to die a miserable death, but I want them to understand that God loves them and God has a wonderful plan for their life, despite the fact they're in prison. I mean, I stay in touch with a very famous inmate. I won't mention his name right now, but one of the most famous inmates left in the world, and he is doing tremendous work for the gospel.
I think, I know who you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I might have even facilitated that at one point in time.
You did, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I agree with you. And, I have a brother who's passed away a number of years ago, but he spent time in Joliet.
Mm-hmm.
And I would want, the same for him had something happen to him. So, yeah, the compassionate part of you certainly wants to help people. And then you end up with that fiscal part of you that says, how do we spend our money? Are we helping other people? But I'll try to think better about it.
All right, Patrick, have a great day. I'll talk to you again soon.
You too. Happy New Year.
You bet. 27 minutes after the hour, we'll take a short break and be back in just a minute. It is half past the hour. Good morning. It's cold out there for sure. You're in the upper Midwest, so dress in layers. I suggest 19. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, Jared Stepman from the Daily Signal will be with us. Be back in a minute. You can get it wrong and still think that it's all right. Good morning. 25 minutes until the top of the hour. As we begin a new year, many people are setting goals and trying to change their life. Jordan Easley says successful change starts with looking to God.
In pastoring, you talk to so many people that are going through something in their life where they're trying to change something. They're trying to lose weight, or they're trying to fix their marriage, or they're trying to fix one of their children. And you just see so many times as a pastor that people attempt change, but very rarely achieve it. And as I was going through a couple of different counseling sessions and things, I started just really diving into the Word, and I was encouraged to read the book of Mark. And as I read the book of Mark, I started reading these personal stories of people that wanted to change. And they were hungry for change, and they needed change, but they couldn't change their life themselves. And it just reminded me of so many people that I've talked to throughout the years that are in that same boat. They're wanting to change, or they need to change, but they can't change their own life. So through that book of Mark, you just see these people that couldn't change their life themselves, but their life ended up changing because they tapped into the power of God. My research basically took me to ask the question, how can I change by tapping into the power of God? How can people change? How can we experience something that we're incapable of experiencing ourselves by simply trusting God with our life?
That was Jordan Easley. He's a pastor, a teacher, and an author. If you want to hear that full interview, it may be a great day to do that. You can go to myfaithradio.com, type in Jordan Easley, or type in life change. Chances are real good you'll get right to that interview. We'll take a short break, and then we'll come back. Jared Stepman's with us from the Daily Signal. We'll be back in a minute.
How willing are you to walk through the wall of fire for what you believe? This is Jim Garlow. I believe we're at that moment. I spoke at one point to a group of several hundred pastors at a university in Alabama. Behind me was the bust of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, a German Lutheran pastor and theologian. You may know the story. When Hitler came to power, Bonhoeffer became a leading spokesman for the Protestant resistance to the Nazis. He was imprisoned and ultimately hanged. I said to those pastors, stop telling stories and using illustrations about Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Be willing to be Dietrich Bonhoeffer. As Christians, we need to dig in deeply to lay the benchmark for where we stand on crucial issues, to take a bold stand on the veracity of God's Word regarding marriage, religious freedom, and our political leadership. There's more at jimgarlow.com. Live out your faith.
Good morning on this very cold day here in the upper Midwest. It's 22 minutes until the top of the hour. Jared Stepman is a editor for the Daily Signal and a cohort of our good friend Rob Bluey and Tommy Binion. Good morning, Jared. Happy New Year.
Good morning to you.
Yeah, thanks. What's it like working with those guys?
Oh, those are great guys. Rob Bluey is my boss. He's the editor in chief of the Daily Signal, and is one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. Is a smart guy. You know, to a certain extent, I consider him a little bit of a mentor to me.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy Binion is absolutely hilarious to work with in the office. He's got a great sense of humor. He's got just a good, easygoing personality. So I'm definitely very fortunate with the coworkers I've had over the years, and they're some of the best ones. And really smart guys. They really understand politics and policy and things like that. But just a great couple of guys.
Yeah, well, I talk to Rob almost every week, and I absolutely just think he is brilliant. And he is just a joy to have on, and he looks like to be quite a snappy dresser on top of it. And my only complaint is he probably overpays for haircuts.
He does. He does always seem to have just the perfectly cut hair.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, Jared, let's get into 2018. Fake news has been, it's been running America, hasn't it? And ruining America.
Well, I say not quite.
Oh, good.
Fake news is not exactly something something new in the history of journalism. I hate to say. I mean, it's something that it's definitely been talked a lot about in the last few years, especially after the 2016 election. But fake news has been around for a very long time. As long as human beings have put things to print. There have been things that have been fraudulent stories and, you know, wrong opinions and things like that. So it's interesting that this became such an issue in 2016, especially 2017, something that's actually a very age-old thing that we've dealt with for a long time.
Jared, let me back up a little bit then. What about journalistic standards and integrity? Maybe we should start there. Has that changed dramatically in the last several years?
I would say that there has definitely been, in some cases, a dropping of standards. And I think what part of the issue is going on is a lot of the partisan feelings on some parts of the press. I think have become exacerbated in the last few years. I think the idea that publications can remain completely above the fray and don't have an agenda or an opinion, I think to a certain extent, that's been revealed to not be true. I think there are a lot of organizations that are considered, you know, so-called mainstream media, that, you know, they have very liberal, of course, of biases, and of course, many publications have conservative biases as well. I think that's really been heightened, especially in the age of Trump, so that a lot of members of the media see themselves as the opposition in particular. And I think that some of that has been revealed to the American people, and I think to a certain extent, it's a good thing to see where the media organizations are as far as where they are politically. I would say that standards in the media have definitely dropped, and we've seen a few real terrible stories that have just been completely just incorrect, and I think it damages those media organizations. It damages people's trust in what their reporting is, and to a large extent, what you do in journalism is, you know, you try to be as objective as you can. You try to give the facts as they are. Now, of course, everybody has a point of view and what they want to cover and what they think is an important story. But if you publish outright fraudulent stories and you keep doing so, you lose credibility in the eyes of the public and do more damage to yourself. And if you do have a cause, your cause, than anything else.
So, Jared, what do you think the trust level is in Americans today in the media and in government? That's kind of a loaded question, but I know you're up to it.
For sure. I would say it's very low. And I think that, unfortunately, because we've seen some stories that have gone bust over the last few years, we've seen a lot of American people think that journalists are outright lying to them. And I think that's something that I think that's changed, certainly in the last 10, 15 years has definitely been flying towards people simply thinking that the media is against them, and or the media is getting things wrong and has an agenda. And I think that we've seen that slide as of late. And if you look at polls of where the media stands in relation to other things. It's a very low ratings. I mean, almost, you know, some cases lower than Congress, and of course, a lot of people hate Congress. So, you know, I would say that, you know, there are good journalists and there are good people in the media who are trying their best to report objectively the facts, that's for sure. But because we see so many stories that have turned out to be incorrect, especially coming from organizations that claim to have such great authority, saying that they are the places that are reporting things straight as they are, to be so blatantly wrong about certain issues and seem to simply just have a deep-seated political agenda that's getting away with those facts, I think you've seen that the trust in those media organizations slide for sure.
Mm-hmm. Jared, putting aside that the president oftentimes uses a tone that people don't like, what do you think about the methodology of him putting out and making news with his tweeting?
You know, I think that with many presidencies, there's been a change in how they reach the American people. I mean, a change in how a president uses new mediums. Of course, you know, people know very famously Franklin Roosevelt's fireside chat. You know, Ronald Reagan perfected the use of television and how he got a message out. Twitter is in many ways a powerful tool to get around how even the media wants to report on things. I mean, when the president puts out a tweet and says something, he doesn't have to go through the filter of a media organization. He doesn't have to go through these filters that many people don't trust. So you just see the president in raw form. Now, given, are there even many of his supporters that sometimes see a Trump tweet and they say, oh, gee, I wish he didn't say that or that? For sure. But at the same time, it's been an incredibly powerful tool that Trump has used better than anybody else I've seen in politics. And I think that's probably going to become a more common thing, especially as you have a president who many in the media don't like or are opposed to or see themselves in contention with. It's a great tool to kind of step around the narrative and get your message out there. It's an incredibly powerful thing.
Mm-hmm. Jared, it's about 11 below here, so I need to sip some hot coffee. So we will take a short break. When I come back, I want to ask you about some of the tweets that the president has made on behalf of the cold weather and some of the pressing issues in 2018 we need to pay attention to. Speaking to Jared Stepman, we'll be back in just a minute. Good morning. It's 12 minutes until the top of the hour. You don't have to be likable to be on my show if you make great contributions. Fortunately, my guest makes great contributions and is likable, Jared Stepman from the Daily Signal. Jared, let's talk about the president's tweets about the weather. Is he making some snarky remarks about climate change and global warming?
He has. He definitely did so. He definitely has in the last week. Has made a few I would say ribbings of those who, of course, believe very strongly in human-caused climate change. And I have to say, they definitely made me laugh quite a bit. That's why I say sometimes President Trump, he really understands Twitter in many ways. But giving a ribbing saying, basically, boy, gee, I wish there was some global warming this week when a lot of people across the country are feeling temperatures that are now dropping into the teens and I'm from California, so these kind of temperatures are pretty extreme for me. So, you know, seeing that is, you know, just it's another example of Trump's ability to use Twitter as a tool to get his message out there and both, of course, you know, tweak the media for pushing this agenda on global warming and what humans can do about it. They believe in many ways that this is something that's going to be stopped or changed through policy, and Trump and his party certainly being skeptical of those things. So it's a good way to kind of rip those opponents of his agenda, and in a way that's funny and entertaining. And I think that's a fine thing for the president to do.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jared. Here in the chilly state of Minnesota, effective today, I think we're the first state in history to have two female senators. Tina Smith will be replacing Al Franken today, taking a crash course in what's it like to be a senator. What does this mean for legislation in 2018?
Well, this will definitely be a big deal in 2018. Obviously, we've seen a few shifts with Doug Jones winning in Alabama, Democrat Doug Jones, taking essentially what was originally a Jeff Sessions seat there. So now we're getting very close to an even vote in the Senate. I mean, now we will basically have a 51-49 vote in the Senate this year. A lot of these votes, like, for instance, with tax reform, basically came down to a single vote. So I think there's definitely a lot more danger for Republicans, especially if they're trying to get through something that is not bipartisan, which, you know, these days most legislation is coming down to a partisan vote. So it could certainly get in the way of any agenda for this year. Now, there's certainly more of a gap in the House of Representatives right now, but having to get both houses of Congress aboard, we are definitely seeing a narrow gap. So if President Trump does want to push through his agenda, whether it be a return to a repealing Obamacare or potentially infrastructure reform or things like that we've seen, he may have to rely on some Democratic votes, which certainly will be a tall order given the fact that Democrats are mostly fiercely opposed to the administration and opposed to his agenda, even things that may seem like something that they would go for. I think it's going to be difficult in this very partisan environment.
Mm-hmm. Jared, it seems that the president had suggested with repealing the individual mandate to Obamacare that he certainly made it sound like Obamacare was kind of done, but that's not nowhere near the truth, is it?
Well, no, it's nowhere near the truth. And certainly the individual mandate is one of the things that people thought to be most unlikable about Obamacare being forced to essentially buy health care. And of course, unfortunately, there's been a lot of rhetoric around that it's just not true that this is taking away people's health insurance. Well, actually, it's just letting them not buy health insurance if that's their choice. But there's certainly a lot of Obamacare regulations still in place. That's something that, you know, Heritage Foundation has talked a lot about. And the Obamacare structure is absolutely 100% in place. And so if Republicans and if Trump want to do away with Obamacare, they're going to have to return to getting legislation through Congress. It's not something that it can be seen as a dead issue going forward that's been resolved by something that was a good thing in this tax bill, but not a cure-all for what the problems of the Obamacare regime are.
Mm-hmm. Jared, I would like you to take the last several minutes to talk about an article that your colleague Ken McIntyre put up about some of the pressing issues for the year. What should we be looking at or being paying attention to?
Well, you know, one issue I think that is very important, and I don't think it's talked enough about, and I do kind of hope that this becomes a more pressing one. I've seen problems with the so-called administrative state, and Trump has used the term the deep state, and I think that this is something that the Trump administration would be very wise to approach. Things like, you know, essentially bureaucrats opposing the president's agenda, who are unelected and in many ways unfireable. And we have very strong civil service rules that prevent the removal of any government employees. And I think in many cases it's become somewhat problematic. And I think that this is an issue that hasn't been talked about enough. I know there was a good column by Kimberly Strassel, the Wall Street Journal, talking about how this would become a big part of the 2020 agenda for the Trump administration. I think that beyond just the other issues, the policy issues like Obamacare or infrastructure or whatever it is, this kind of gets to the heart of how our government functions. And we've seen so many stories this last year how bureaucrats, and say, for instance, the EPA, are trying to undermine the elected president's agenda. I think the American people should take another look at how their government functions. I mean, is this the Republic of the Founders based on electoral politics, or is it one which, you know, a small-time bureaucrat in some agency is essentially setting policy for the country? And I think that I think that's going to be a big issue in 2018. I think that people are going to start paying more attention. Certainly, President Trump, who may be trying to get the agenda through or whatever it is, has definitely had frustrations with the fact that many in the administration, with its almost 2 million public employees, over 2 million public employees, have essentially resisted his policies and have tried to change them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is going to be a big issue, one that I think people haven't followed all that closely and don't maybe understand, because civil service rules are very complex. But the problem with the administrative state and the power it has is one of the most important in this country, and I think it's going to be a big issue in 2018.
Yeah. Well, Jared, thank you so much for coming on the program. If I sent you one of those novelty dribble glasses, would you put it on Rob's desk?
I would love to do that.
Well, awesome. We'll work as a team then, and we'll keep it quiet between you and me. Would love to have you. Would love to have you back on the show. We will call you again. Thank you so much, and Happy New Year.
Thank you so much. Happy New Year.
Thanks a lot, Jared. That's Jared Stepman from the Daily Signal. We'll take a short break. It's 3 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll be right back.
First of the month keeps it coming up much too much, but I'll make it. Day at a time.
Thank you very much to Jared Stepman and Patrick Albanese for a great first hour. In Psalm 90, verse 12, it says, "Teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom." That's one of my themes for 2018. Wisdom. Boy, do I want that, because I need it. All right, we'll take a short break, and hour two is straight ahead. Be back in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend, and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.